We'll start our next session. It's a packed session, so we'd appreciate if you could all settle down. Okay, I'm Anwar Naseem in the Department of Natural Resources at McGill. I'll be co-chairing the next session, and the title of the next session is Bridging the Divide, Water Scarcity, Food Security, and Health. And we've had a few changes in the program and the lineup. We have an addition, and one of our speakers will be has changed the order and you'll see who that is at the end. surprise for you, I guess. the first speaker is Ian Campbell. He's the Director of Integrated Natural Resources at Ag Canada. And he has a BA in math and economics, a master's in economics. And he's worked for the government since 1986. Not true. See, this is what happens when you rely too much on Google. Because he came in at the last minute, and we should have looked at the picture and matched the picture first. So he does not have a BA in math, and he does not have a master's in economics. He will tell us what his credentials are when he gets here. I guess this is all wrong. hopefully he does have extensive experience with freshwater policy in Canada. Is that true? Okay. And currently leads the climate change adaptation for the department. So I'll ask him to come up.
Well, yes, Ian Campbell with the BA in math and the master's in economics is my doppelganger. There are two Ian Campbells in the same branch of the same department. It's a rare day that we don't get each other's emails and so on, so nothing to be worried about. My bachelor's and master's are geology and my PhD is botany, and I've only been in government since 92, I do have fairly extensive experience in freshwater policy. For 5 years I was at the Policy Research Initiative out of the Privy Council Office doing freshwater policy. Been with agriculture just for a year and a half, and I am director of the Division of Integrated Natural Resources. So, Chandra asked me to just say a few words about what Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada is doing with water. I'll try and keep it fairly brief since I am being sort of parachuted in here. So we have a fairly extensive role in water, obviously. We do irrigation and drainage engineering. Some of you may be familiar with the former Prairie Farm Rehabilitation Administration, which is now being absorbed into the department, a large chunk of that in my division. We do a lot of work on water quality protection, some work on irrigation agronomy, climate change, and we do have some international engagement, although that's not a fundamental part of the departmental mandate. There are a number of policy pressures and drivers that push us into water, and I won't go through this in a lot of detail in the interest of time, but consumer pressures, consumers want obviously safe and sustainable food and water quality protection, and water supply has something to do with that. There's also demand for environmental goods and services in Canada, which is quite strong. The social license to operate for agriculture is not fundamentally threatened yet. But certainly we are starting to hear increasing rumblings about how agriculture needs to be more environmentally friendly. There are environmental pressures, with climate change in particular, putting pressure on water resources in parts of the country. And we do have demand from other sectors for what is in some places increasingly scarce water. So water is not one issue. It's a large complex of issues. We can roughly divide it from an agricultural perspective into two large clusters. There's on-farm water supply, and there's the integrated management of agricultural impacts on watersheds. And there are a number of things that fall under each of those. Sort of short form, we can call it quantity and quality. Both matter and are often very hard to separate. The department has currently and in the past had a lot of activities on water policy. It's one of the two environment priorities under the current Growing Forward policy framework. And obviously the former PFRA was heavily involved in water. We also do a lot of science research in various aspects of water management with the WEBS program. I'll talk about it in a few minutes, the Watershed Evaluation of Beneficial Management Practices. We do a lot of geomatics work with the former National Land and Water Information System, and we have a number of other programs that conduct and fund research relating to water. One of the key issues for us is where we should sit on this continuum of demand versus supply management. Obviously, there is a need for supply management, but in lots of places, it makes an awful lot of sense to try and manage the demand rather than trying to manage the supply, particularly where supply is increasingly limited. There are limitations to how much supply you can build. So we need to address all parts of the spectrum, and right now the department is actually struggling to try and decide just where we should be sitting, where should the balance of our effort be. And we're obviously going to have to do bits everywhere, but the emphasis is a matter of some debate. So there has to be a bit of an interlocking strategy. We have to maximize on-farm water use and storage efficiency, which is both supply and demand. We have to pursue integrated management at a watershed level, which will have a lot to do with both demand and supply, as well as water quality. To do these things, we have to conduct a lot of research, which is a good public sector role, and we have to do a lot of technology development and transfer. All of this together should hopefully, if we get it right, we are government, so I don't know. But if we do get it right, then this will lead to integrating water quantity and quality for both surface and groundwater. It'll be a win for everybody in this shiny, bright future. I'm going to speak just very briefly about some of the things that we do currently, particularly in my division, because it's the one I'm most familiar with. We do a lot of irrigation and drainage engineering, flow measurement, water sampling, developing techniques, developing technologies, and that sort of thing to make it easier for people to acquire data, easier for people to analyze the data and make use of it so that they know what they're doing and the impact they're going to have. We also do a fair amount of engineering for irrigation and drainage, and this is a dam that was rebuilt in 2009 by our engineers. The area was hit by torrential rains just this past summer, and the dam stood up. The dam did what the dam was supposed to do. Unfortunately, the Trans-Canada Highway, which was just downstream from the dam, suffered a major collapse of lanes and was closed for a brief period of time. But the dam survived. So we got some pretty good engineers. They're also looking at things like water intake technology, and we're doing projects at all scales, from the big dams down to things like trying to develop better mesh screens for irrigation water intakes that will keep fish from getting sucked into the intake and things like that. There's really no limit to the needs, and we can't address them all, but we try to identify some priority pieces to work on. The WEBS project, which I mentioned before, is one of our showcase pieces, I think, Watershed Evaluation of Beneficial Management Practices. This is a program that started a number of years ago, and this year added two new sites, so it's now up to 9 sites across Canada, where in these sites we have a long list, which you don't need to read. If you really want to, you'll find it online, or I can send you a report. Long list of beneficial management practices, mainly focused around water quality protection. And these practices are actually being tested in real-world circumstances on real operating private sector farms, looking at not just the impact that they have on environmental water quality, but also the impact that they have on the farmers' bottom lines, which is absolutely essential if you want it to actually be put into practice anywhere. So one of the interesting things, not all of the results are quite what we would have predicted from smaller scale studies. Some of the beneficial management practices, which in some cases are funded and sometimes even fairly generously funded by provincial governments and federal government in the past, turn out to have pretty wobbly results, if I can put it that way, not always quite as beneficial as we would have hoped. Some that we didn't really think that much of have turned out to be quite successful. One really successful one is controlled tile drainage, which is being tested at the South Nation watershed southwest of here. Controlled tile drainage turns out not only to work wonders for water quality in the streams in the area, but it also actually increases yield so much that the installation pays for itself within 4 or 5 years for corn and soybean farmers. So this is a real win, and it's the kind of thing that, given that it is profitable for farmers, should not require too much of an incentive from government to make it happen. It'll be mainly about information transfer. I'll also mention briefly some of the work we do in water quality and food safety sorts of issues. There was, for those of you who are not from Canada, you may not have heard of the Walkerton crisis in 2000. Walkerton, Ontario, small town where there was a very heavy, very unusually heavy rainfall which washed some E. coli from fields into the into one of the town's wells. There was some significant mismanagement of the well, which resulted in that E. coli getting out of control, and 7 people died. A large number of people became quite ill, and some still are quite ill today. This really wakened people up across Canada to agricultural water pollution and water quality issues, food safety issues, E. coli in general. So we have a fair amount of work going on looking at reservoir aeration to improve water quality for on-farm use, but also a fair amount of work looking at various inexpensive and practical ways of managing farm wastewater and runoff from fields that will hopefully result in this kind of thing not happening again. We're also looking, or we're also part of a group of federal departments and others that help develop water quality guidelines. Most of the guidelines are chemical and are really relate to farm production, but some of them, particularly some of the parasite-related ones, the pathogen-related ones, are really about food safety. We have in Canada the Red Assiniboine watershed is a very large watershed which flows into Lake Winnipeg, which is a major fishery, freshwater fishery. It also has the town of Winnipeg is in the watershed. The lake is eutrophic, becoming hyper-eutrophic, It's not entirely sure just yet exactly where the phosphorus primarily is coming from, but certainly some of it must be coming from agriculture in the watershed. So we have a large project looking at finding ways of reducing the phosphorus loading into that system. We have work ongoing on irrigation agronomy, looking at various things from farming practices, rotations and so on, irrigation efficiency systems, and plant genetics as well. A number of things that we're looking at to see if we can find ways of producing more food with less water and, of course, more profit. One of my files is climate change adaptation. Climate change in Canada is expected to make the country warmer, which most Canadians will very much enjoy in winter. It's going to increase precipitation in most of the country, but in particularly in the prairies and in parts of British Columbia, possibly parts of southern Ontario, the increase in precipitation is going to be no match for the increase in evapotranspiration due to the increase in temperature. Parts of the southern prairies are already semi-desert. We can expect some parts of the southern prairies to become full-blown desert, and we are expecting that by 2050. This is not going to be good for agriculture in those areas, just in case there was any doubt. A lot of people assume that warmer Canada means a Canada that is going to be more agriculturally productive as agriculture is able to expand northwards. That is not necessarily the case everywhere. As you get north of this line of lakes, roughly, north of that line of lakes, you run into the Canadian Shield, which has very little soil, most of our soil in that region having been rather generously, I think, exported to the United States about 18,000 years ago due to continental glaciation. So the lack of soil will be definitely limiting to just how much agriculture can move northwards with climate change. We have recently been looking very seriously at how agriculture may adapt. For that, of course, you need to first know what the impacts are. And here, the second scenario here, this one, is most likely given current projections. This is projected drought scenarios. The height of the bars indicates the severity of the drought, and obviously the frequency of the bars is the frequency of drought. This is just one scenario. Built from a number of climate projections and past data. You can see in blue is the historic record, and in red is the four different projected scenarios. It's not good. So we definitely have things to worry about and things that we are going to need to change in order to adapt to this. We have a Drought Watch program, which is connected to the North American Drought Monitor, which helps farmers identify drought occurring fairly early in the season and track things, see where in the country drought is not happening. They can arrange feed transfers and so on. We also have a tax deferral program by which livestock producers can slightly reduce the impact of a severe drought on their operations when a severe enough drought occurs. We've run a series of 13 workshops across Canada. Somebody mentioned earlier the need for consultation to find out what people actually want instead of government just going and doing it to them. In these consultations, we've met with over 500 people across the country to find out just what they think we ought to be doing for them to help them adapt to climate change. And if anybody wants to talk about that later on, I'm delighted to do that. These workshops absorb the better part of a year of my life, so still enjoy talking about them, surprisingly. The theme of this particular conference, though, is more international, so I thought I'd throw in a couple of slides at the end about some of our international activities. In color here are some of the countries where we have had activities in recent years. And you can see we've worked in fairly large number of countries across around the world. just mention a not atypical one, although they're certainly all different. I don't think there are any two activities that are the same. In Ethiopia, we went in to, with CETA funding to develop what we thought would turn out to be two or three fairly significantly large irrigation projects. When we got on the ground, we found that a larger number of smaller projects would be a lot more appropriate, so that's what we ended up doing. With the Global Research Alliance on Greenhouse Gases, that's a consortium of 31 countries now, as of last week, and growing around the world, sharing information and research on greenhouse gases in agriculture to try and find ways of mitigating it, which is a win-win-win for everybody, including the environment. And that's it.